All right, we're back in session. Carly, can you please read agenda item 164, please?
Yes. Accept the residential demolition ordinance report from the Bureau of Development Services and the Development Review Advisory Committee.
Colleagues, today I'm requesting that the council accept the residential demolition ordinance report presented by the Bureau of Development Services. The residential demolition ordinance addresses extremely harmful contaminants. Asbestos and lead-based paint can become airborne and threaten the health of residents in neighboring properties and of workers during demolitions. Until 2017, existing regulations exempted residential demolitions for most asbestos and lead-based paint requirements. In 2015 and 2017, respectively, the state enacted two bills to close these regulatory gaps. Using the authority these bills granted the local jurisdictions, the City of Portland enacted a new residential demolition ordinance that created a first-of-its-kind program to address these contaminants, effective July 1st of 2018. Since then, the Bureau of Development Services has been monitoring the program to determine what improvements need to be made. BDS staff have met with stakeholders, including representatives from federal, state, and local agencies, demolition, deconstruction, and asbestos lead-based paint abatement contractors, and the Development Review Advisory Committee, DRAC, Demolition Subcommittee, over the past 6 months to review the program. This report summarizes the program, what worked, issues to be identified to improve the program, recommendations for amendments to the ordinance, and proposed next steps. To share the findings of this work, we have today Nancy Thorington and Mike Leefield from the Bureau of Development Services, Mary Helen Kincaid, the former DRAC chair and current chair of the DRAC Demolition Subcommittee, and Justin Wood, the current DRAC member and former DRAC chair. So with that, we will begin our presentation. Good morning, and I think Nancy's up first.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Nancy Thorington. I'm a senior code and policy analyst with the Bureau of Development Services. And as you know, also with me is Mary Helen Kincaid and Justin Wood. So we're here to report on the demolition ordinance that went into effect, and we'll provide a high-level overview of the ordinance and its implementation, and then take your questions. Before the council enacted this, as the mayor said, there were no regulations for dust and debris that contain asbestos and lead-based paint. Although DEQ had authority, it didn't have the staff to enforce those regulations. So working with the agencies and the stakeholders, we developed this ordinance, and through it, we and the accompanying administrative rules, BDS has been able to greatly enhance the protection of the neighboring properties by, first of all, requiring that plastic be laid down on the ground adjacent to the structures. And if you look at this slide, you'll see two different methods. If there's space, then it goes 10 feet out. And if there's not, if you look at the garage on the left-hand side, you can see vertical containment there that helps keep it on the off the neighbor's property if it's too close. The next way we've done this is by requiring that the exterior painted surfaces be removed. The decision was made by the stakeholders, including the regulators, when we were developing these rules, that most of the lead-based paint comes in the form of the exterior components, knowing that there still are some, components inside that are going to have lead, but this really provided the most efficient way of getting most of the lead off, and then knowing that the wetting and the site containment would deal with the rest of the lead. Then another way is by requiring that the dumpsters where they put the debris be lined with plastic, and what that does is it keeps the lead and asbestos from running onto the site. We also require that the equipment, the structure, and the debris be wetted down. So this is probably where the rubber meets the road on these regulations, because that's really where the neighbors get protected. You can see from this slide how that works. You basically put the water where the mechanical demolition is happening, and that really takes the dust right down. And then this is a picture of a wind speed monitor. The If the wind speed exceeds 25 miles an hour, then no mechanical demolition can happen. And the reason for 25 miles an hour was we consulted with our subject matter experts, and they told us that basically that's the point at which they felt that the wetting would still keep the dust and the water on the site. And then finally, we do debris containment for the site. You can see from this slide what they've done is they've put plastic around, and that keeps, you know, obviously it rains here, plus you're wetting with a, you know, with a hose, and that keeps it from going off the site, going into the gutter, going into the neighbor's property. And then this is just a brief timeline. I'm not going to go over the time pieces, you know, before 2018, but it shows you how long we've been working on this project. Going from July 1st, 2018, when we began implementing the ordinance, it was, as the mayor said, a new first-of-its-kind program in the country, so we knew, obviously, we were going to need to come back and make some adjustments. So council asked us to come back January 1st with a report. And our staff has been documenting issues they've encountered on the site. We've been meeting with stakeholders, including the abatement contractors and the various agencies and DRAC, since May of 2019. And then based on this input, we've made some adjustments to the program, which Mike here will discuss, and we're making some recommendations for changes to the ordinance that I will review in a moment. And with that, I will turn it over to Mike.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Mike Liefeld. I'm with the Bureau of Development Services. And we wanted to run through a little bit more of those demolition permit highlights to get you up to speed to where we are today. So the first slide we're going to look at is prior to July 1st, 2018. This is just going to go over a high-level overview of the highlights. The local regulations, in addition to state building code for structural demolitions, are local regulations, if any, only applied to one and two family structures. We did have a demolition delay provision, which was an opportunity to provide housing preservation. The permit review was very simple. It was generally an over-the-counter permit after the 35-day demo delay period had ended. And there was some neighborhood notification. There was mailed notices mailed out to surrounding properties, and some door hangers were required to be posted only on adjacent properties to the demolition site. And one inspection was completed. That inspection was completed after the demolition had been completed and all debris removed. So fast forward to July 1st when we adopted the new changes to our local code, Title 24, our residential demolition code, and we see that we expanded the coverage. We now had our new regulations applying to 1 to 4 dwelling unit structures and accessory structures, so your garages, your carports. We looked at multi or mixed use structures. Anything that had a residential dwelling unit was subject to our new language. The demolition delay, demolition delay still remained unchanged. The permit review process went to intake. We now had to take in the permits to ensure that the plan review was completed to make sure that all the pre-issuance requirements were met before issuing the permit. Neighborhood notification expanded. We continued to mail out notification to surrounding property owners, but a big increase was the door posting. So door notification was expanded to all properties within 300 feet of the demolition site. And the inspections changed. We introduced three inspections. One was an inspection to be completed prior to starting any demolition activity to make sure the site was set up with its containment measures. There was a during demolition inspection that was specified to be completed during the demolition work to ensure that site controls were being maintained. And we had a final inspection to make sure the site was all wrapped up in compliance with all the codes. Hallmarks of the new program on July 1st also included asbestos abatement. So this is where the city took an active role in ensuring that the asbestos survey required by DEQ was completed. We reviewed that asbestos survey, and then we also reviewed the abatement letter, the closeout letter, to ensure that that abatement had been completed prior to issuing a demolition permit. We had lead hazard reductions to ensure that high concentrations of lead were removed prior to mechanical demolition. This was accomplished by requiring hand removal of exterior painted surfaces with containment measures in place. That had to be completed prior to mechanical demolition occurring. And then we had the wetting, as Nancy discussed. The wetting was a key component for dust control. We didn't have that in code before this, so wetting before, during, and after is appropriate to control dust. So we have been implementing those measures since July 1st, and on February 10th, we had one additional change. As we were going through our update process and discussing changes, we heard concerns about the sequencing of the previous three demolition inspections. Given the various stages of demolition activity to comply with the lead hazard reductions and mechanical demolition wetting requirements, concerns were raised that the three inspections were not sufficient to verify critical site control elements throughout the project. As a result of multiple BDS stakeholder work group meetings that targeted specifically the inspection sequencing issue, BDS adopted a temporary administrative rule, which was effective on February 10th, 2020, to require four demolition inspections on every job. So if we look at the slide post February 10th, we've changed inspections to four. So those inspections are really key to making sure that we've locked that inspection down to the gate of activity that needs to be verified at that time.
Commissioner Hardesty has a question.
Thank you. didn't want to interrupt, but I'm curious about, now that there's four inspections, how does that drastically increase the cost of the permit?
The permit costs have not changed. We will be looking at permit fees as we introduced this as a temporary, almost emergency rule to make sure that we address that concern. We will be looking at any fees related to the additional inspections, but we also haven't covered that, but one element that we did introduce was a new live video inspection method in lieu of an in-person inspection.
I read that. Uh-huh.
And if that is successful and widely used, that is going to help decrease costs.
I was going to say, because we don't want to actually increase the cost of getting a permit to do it the right way, right? So yeah, please help us make sure that we're not overburdening people, because this is the right thing to do, so we should do it.
Right.
I also want to acknowledge your evolution on this. I think it's great, and there's been the policy, community feedback, media feedback, and you've changed the way you're doing it based on some of that feedback. My recollection is that some of the concern around inspections was definition and the importance of inspecting during the process. Tell me a little bit more about your thinking on that.
Right, so the previous ordinance used language of during demolition activity, and as I described, when you have the different elements, you have a pre-demolition with making sure your containment measures are down, then we have hand removal of exterior surfaces, we have mechanical demolition. That all is within the spectrum of during demolition, and I think there was concern that there was an expectation that certain inspections were supposed to be locked in at elements of demolition, but we didn't have that same interpretation as we rolled out the new ordinance. We certainly heard that in fall of 2019 and immediately went to work setting up those meetings to get more information, and that's why those meetings solely focused on the inspection sequencing. So we could nail down everyone's expectation and intent on where those inspections needed to occur, work with customers to make sure that the inspections could work for the job, and figure out different ways to complete those inspections.
So tell me about the case that I read about where it's a small building and the demolition is happens very, very quickly. How do you get I guess I get the pre-inspection and I get the post-inspection, but if it's a demolition that's going to happen very quickly, how do you actually get the interim two inspections in?
Well, there's always going to be the first during demolition that's required, and now it's very
clear. So they're not allowed to start the project without somebody being on site? How does that work?
Correct. So there's two during demolition inspections. One is a gate to make sure that mechanical demolition cannot start until we verify that all the exterior painted surfaces have been removed. That is a hard gate. It's loaded into the inspection system, and it would be a clear violation if they proceed without passing that inspection. Then they have some options about their timing. If they are confident that all those exterior painted materials have been removed, that they can stage the mechanical inspection to begin as soon as we give that approval, and we can then start to verify that the wetting is operational if they want to just move from one inspection to the next. But we also know that they have different people doing this work. Sometimes they'll sub out a deconstruction specialist to do the hand removal. Then they'll have an excavator come do the mechanical demolition, and sometimes those things don't line up perfectly. So we do treat that as that second inspection, that if they want to verify that all the exterior painted materials have been properly removed past that inspection, then they call in and schedule the next mechanical demolition inspection. That work cannot begin until that mechanical demolition inspection starts. They cannot start until we are on site. We verify that the wetting system is operational and in use. We are verifying that it is actively controlling any dust from the mechanical demolition, and that's how that inspection would be approved.
You said that as the live video feed reinspection process app comes online, and I understand it's already being used for reinspections, plumbing, electrical, and some other stuff, I guess, that you'll move more in that direction for expediency. But for the time being, are you still on the site physically?
So the video option is live. So that was live on February 10th. And I think word's getting out.
Thank you.
But that is an option in lieu of an in-person inspection. So what we heard through our work group meetings was the trade-off, the balancing between the time delays. So when we do in-person inspections, we're not able to give time certain. And we heard that was a big concern for people doing the work. If they've rented a water truck, if they've rented equipment out there, they need certainty to make sure that they can start the job rather than waiting until 8 in the morning to find out that as we plan out our geographic routes to maximize our inspector resources, that we may not get out there until between 1 and 3 in the afternoon. So we created this video option to say, can video technology help us? Because that's an easy inspection if we don't have all the drive time and traffic. And so that was live on February 10th. It's available for all customers who want to use it.
Great. Thank you for that innovation. I appreciate it.
Mayor.
Commissioner Daly.
I'm going to have some questions and comments, but I wanted to, I think, let you finish before I... Do you have much left? Or?
I really don't, because that really covered the last elements that I was going to provide. Thank you.
Thanks. I just want to take a moment to put this into context. We actually didn't have the ability to regulate lead paint in residential demolitions until Senator Denbrough sponsored SB 871 in 2017. 4 months later, my office developed and advanced the ordinance that we're talking about today. It's something that's very close to our hearts. My chief of staff has a child who experienced high lead exposure in early childhood, and so we know in our office the detrimental effects, although this child doesn't seem to have sustain any long-term injuries, lead exposure can cause permanent brain damage in children, especially children ages 1 to 5, but in people into their early 20s, because believe it or not, our brains are still developing in our early 20s. So lead exposure is a solvable problem. It's impacting millions of people across our country. There's no lack of sound science. There's been a lack of political will. And so I'm very grateful to Senator Denbrough and to Council for supporting this ordinance. Now we have to ensure that our intentions are actually enforced, because the rule doesn't actually protect anyone from exposure. So I feel fairly clear that we've resolved this confusion around that second inspection. So I just want to summarize to make sure there's no ambiguity. In order to demolish a residential structure currently covered by city code, you must first remove the siding, doors, and windows. You then must get your wedding equipment ready, and then you wait for a BDS inspection before demolishing. Is that a correct description?
Yes, they have to remove all the painted surfaces, and that has to receive an inspection to verify that okay. all of the painted material covered under our rule has been removed, and they are not able to start mechanical demolition until either a live video or an in-person inspector is at the site verifying that the wedding system is operational as mechanical demolition begins.
Great. And with the new administrative rules, will there ever be a case where a demolition occurs before the second BDS inspection happens?
It is possible. So,
but not legal.
Not legally.
Not legally, right. So I come from the enforcement world, and I can never guarantee you that I can ensure with any measures that we can have 100% compliance, but I do think we've set up the right systems, the right communication, so the information is clear, and we have a very strong enforcement response that can deal with those one-off situations, which what I hope is a one-off situation.
And then what kind of documentation is available afterwards if people want to review it for compliance?
So when we perform inspections, all of our inspection results are entered into our Amanda 7 database, which the public has access, and you can view inspection results on Portland Maps online.
Okay.
Those are not approved, approved, approved with corrections, and you can see correction notices. In addition, my team of inspectors, we also create photo logs. We do inspection documents that are attached within that Amanda 7 software. So those are available that the public can see. They're not available online yet, but they're available on our public terminals.
Okay. We do, just so you know, Commissioner Udaly, we have a link to a demolition map on our website that you can actually zero in on the property itself, and you could, if you didn't know the permit number or, the address or that information, that would give you the start to then be able to give us the information to get, deeper in.
Okay. And then my final question is, how soon will you conduct an internal review to see if the changes you've made are working or if further revisions are needed to ensure the intent of the ordinance is being followed?
So we're going to be, our recommendations are, we're in the report, we're going to be looking to amend the ordinance as it is now. There's some language in there that is that we know needs to be worked on, and we plan to come back. The report said in March, but obviously with a four-week turnaround time, that's not going to happen. So we would shoot for April. I've drafted that to come look at that, but we haven't, we would like to hear from you if you want us to come back within a certain period of time to do a follow-up on that, probably when we, if you accept the report and the recommendations, when we come back with that ordinance, if you then want us to do a check-in in a certain period of time, then, just let us know and we'll do that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you. First, let me just say how impressed I am with the process that you've used to engage the public that's most impacted, whether it's developers or whether it's neighbors. I just really appreciate seeing the timeline and seeing the evolution. And so it's rare to, know what happened at the beginning, especially if you get here midstream, right? So I want to say that I'm very impressed with the work that you've done and where you're headed. I have a couple of questions, however. Why is 4 the magic number? What if there's 26 apartment complexes that the building's being torn down? What happens then?
It's just a distinction between residential and commercial. I meant to mention that because it sounds like we only care about buildings with 4 units or less, but the Senate bill was specifically pertaining to residential. I would love to hear what the rules are for those commercial properties.
I was headed that way too, yes.
Yeah, the commercial properties have not been included, and technically under the code, it's really bizarre, but 1 and 2 is residential, 3 to 4 is technically under the commercial code, but part of what prompted it to go to 4 was there were conversions, and that just is a number like a fourplex tends to be, you know, more small residential, and so it was easier to work with. The reason that we haven't moved over to the commercial side, there are a couple of reasons. One, this was such an issue in Portland because there were so many residential demolitions happening. If you look in the report, you can see on the commercial side, the 3 to 4s, there were only like 7 that happened in the whole time.
Right.
And the rules are different as they apply to the commercial structures. The asbestos and the lead-based paint regulations are different, and we didn't have the right stakeholders because we had residential in the, you know, the demolition subcommittee. We had people like Justin, who, you know, is a residential contractor. And so if we were given direction to then move to look at the commercial, we would change the stakeholder group to reflect people who do that work.
Do we have a sense for whether or not we have a lot of commercial buildings that have lead paint and asbestos in the walls? No, we got a lot of URMs around here. I don't know about the asbestos.
Yeah, I mean, the asbestos, certainly in the older buildings, yeah. I mean, you know, like if you were demolishing a school, you know, the way asbestos works is if it's airborne,
right,
you know,
right,
that's where the problem comes, right, which, you know, hence the dust reduction. But if we were given direction to look into the commercial realm, we would certainly do that. And, you know, because, again, you know, some of the things here, you know, you're not going to put, tags on 300 surrounding properties if you're in downtown. That doesn't make any sense. So some of the pieces that we have here, or, you know, the site containment pieces, don't make sense in a commercial situation.
I think that if we're going to have a standard, it shouldn't matter whether it's a residential standard or a business standard, right? But if we want to make sure that as those buildings come down, why would we not want to have a commercial standard? Anyway, I have
sure.
one more question,
yep.
which is the fines for non-compliance, in my perspective, are very low. So when the first offense is $5,000, the second is $10,000, and the third is $15,000, for many folks who do a lot of development, that's pocket change, right? I think if somebody is violating our policy, they should feel it. We make poor people feel it, so we should make other folks feel it as well. And so is that always been the fine, or is that a new proposal?
That's been the fine since we started this program.
And what is that based on?
Well, that was based on, you know, talking with developers and, you know, the cost of doing it right versus the fine. And, you know, I don't know, Justin, if you have any other pieces to add to that.
Well, the only thing I will say to the cost of the fine is one of the things we were trying to be somewhat sensitive to is a lot of, if you look at the report where you can see that the number of violations, currently you can fail an inspection based on the inspection code you call in for various things, like not having straw down, which is just a mud erosion issue that doesn't necessarily pertain to lead and asbestos, is grouped into the same inspection category, not having a sign up, not doing something. And so the question is, you know, we're trying to delineate between, is a first offense $5,000 fine for somebody who is trying to do the right thing but missed a small step, do they still get hit with that $5,000 fine? Should they get hit with a $20,000 fine for a small piece? And how do you compare that against somebody who was deliberately really trying to break to cheat the system?
Yes, and how would you?
Well, and that's where, and I think, and that's a hard one to, I think on some levels, if you were going to do something, it's, is there a a punitive step or a civil step that can be taken in addition to the fines for somebody who's actively trying to cheat the system. And I know, for example, you also, if lead and asbestos, if somebody's purposely not doing things right, you can also bring in, you know, DEQ and OSHA and various other things. So there's extra steps that can be taken to punish somebody who's really trying to not do things right.
They'll have their new house built by the time that happens. But thank you. I appreciate. So, I mean, I guess my question is, so if the fine was like, let's say $20,000, and then there was a appeal process where somebody could make the case for, I was really trying to do the right thing, and actually this is what happened, right? Then that would allow for some flexibility. But my experience has been is that people do a cost analysis, right? Is it cheaper for me to just pay the fine, or do I do the right thing because it's the right thing to do? So, we don't have to decide it today, but I hope that you'll consider that as you're moving forward and finalizing this new information.
Yeah, that's a good point. And part of that was actually part of the monitoring process. We put those fines in place, and then part of it is looking at it. Were we seeing a lot of intentional violations? And I mean, this is Mike's program, but my experience is that we haven't seen a lot.
I would echo that. I think as with a new program, as I described, we went from a paper permit, a one-page permit that was done over the counter, to a new intake with multiple inspections, and part of it was communicating the new expectations out to the customers. So we haven't experienced a rush of enforcement actions that would tend to support a number of bad actors in the community. That just hasn't been our experience. And the $5,000 starting point is very high for a civil penalty that BDS has for all other enforcement. So compared to our other enforcement responses, it is elevated quite a bit. I'm not saying if that's the right fit or not. It just in comparison to other fees. And I can tell you that folks do care because they do call and they do appeal. So that is happening already, which tells me that the $5,000 starting point is getting their attention, which is the goal, but we can certainly discuss if that is the right number.
Thank you. And I guess my last question is, I asked you about whether you were raising a permit fee, and I see you've actually raised it to $180. And is that a new as compared to before you come back with this report? Is that in place now, or is that something that you're adding on?
That was in place as of July 1st, 2018.
Okay. Thank you all. And again, really good work. I really appreciate watching the evolution of the work that you've done. It's wonderful to be able to see that we're both listening and adapting and testing and then making good decisions based on that. So thank you all.
Thank you. If I think Justin and Mary Helen wanted to say a few words.
Sure. I'm going to give you more reason to say good things. I'm the oldest one that's been here the longest, and so I want to give you just a little perspective that this started out of neighborhood meetings over the original demolition code. A woman by the name of Kimberly Kohler and the Eastmoreland Association came to DRAC and said, this is crazy, you need to do something, not about demolitions, but about hazardous materials. Mm-hmm. And probably Robert McCullough's name is familiar to you. He jumped on the bandwagon, and he and I and Jeff Fish, a former DRAC chair, said, let's go out and listen to the community. So we did. And what we heard was, keep our citizens safe. And so we convened this group, and you'll find this amusing, maybe. I went to then director of BDS, Paul Scarlett, and said, you need to get all these people together. And I came up with a big, long list of 14 different agencies, EPA at the top of the pile. He said, I can't tell those people to come to meeting, but if you ask them, I'll give you a room. So I started out, and Jeff and I asked them. They came to a room. It was a snowy day in January. In January 2015, and they came to the room. Everybody had a different avenue. I mean, there are so many people with so many tentacles into this. Perry Cabot at Multnomah County was a lead person on a lot of this because he had an interest and a connection with Senator Denbrough about how we handle hazardous materials in construction. And so that's how that came, and it kind of ran parallel. Because there were DRAC members involved and because BDS had supported this, it sort of became known as the DRAC Demolition Subcommittee. But it really was a working group. It's like, how can we get all these pieces together in a room to come out with something good? But I can't do the math. 5 years later, we have, I believe, something good that the number one goal of everybody was to keep people safe and find the best way to do that. This ordinance is one of its kind in the United States. So need to take pride in that the city and staff did that. No one was ever officially appointed. When we brought the first demolition code / asbestos to council, they said, come back and tell us how you do in a year, and, oh, by the way, add the Landmarks Commission. So it was kind of, we added one more person to the talk. I think that Baltimore and Detroit have much watered down versions of what we have. It's just sort of, you need to do something and have fun doing it. I think that the DRAC members have participated and led this in a number of different ways, but there's been many other citizens, and I just kind of wanted to recognize a couple of them because they were instrumental. UNR and Al Ellis and John Sandy did a great amount of work and advocacy on the behalf. And the EPA, people even commented that how we got them to come from Seattle to come to a meeting in Portland was amazing. And the number of staff that have been supportive that have wanted to do this. So that I've done a lot of stuff in a lot of different avenues in Portland civic work, and I think this is one of the best processes result that I've seen. Wasn't always pretty, wasn't always nice, and being a DRAC chair, and Justin can speak to this if he wants, well, most often had a target on their check. And me especially, because I was a neighborhood person who was friends with the business community.
Imagine that.
Yes, but I mean, that was terribly surprising to some people on both sides. You know, we're going to listen to her, and she's going to go to lunch with them or whatever. So I think
I have the same issue, yeah. People tell me the same thing, right?
Yeah.
That never happens to me.
No.
My apologies for interrupting.
And then if you want even more experience, come to a Levy Ready Columbia meeting, and then you can really take shots from all sides. So I really want to commend the city staff for doing this, for all the city council people that came along this way, because everybody had to support it because it was contentious, it wasn't pretty, and it was terribly hard to understand. If you wanted to say 6 years ago, who handles hazardous materials, I don't think any one person would give you the same answer. The EPA to the OHA to the CCB, I mean, I learned so many acronyms, I don't even know all the ones I learned. And working with Marshall and the issue with his daughter was, I think, a really good, I don't want to say poster child, but it was a really good live example of this is what can happen if we ignore this, and people wanted to do that. And then lastly, that has nothing to do with this, thanks for leaving Nick's name card up there. It kind of makes me feel a little bit stronger today. So thank you.
Thank you. Mayor?
Yeah, please, Commissioner Hurst.
I just want to say that was the part that I left out, right? Bureau staff can do great work, but they can only do great work if they're working in partnership with the community. And so you have done a remarkable job of actually reminding us that long before legislators stop passing legislation and long before bureaus start trying to figure out the problem, there are people out in the community like you saying, we got a problem and we got to fix this. And then, so I just want to applaud you because as someone who was, you know, and still is, right, a community activist and somebody who, when you saw something wrong, started bringing people together, I appreciate that. And thank you for that reminder that we don't even know it unless somebody like you is out there advocating in the community saying, hey, wait a minute, like, look at this. Thank you.
I just want to tell you one example of that is in, I think, Commissioner Udaly, you were there at a Rose City Park neighborhood meeting mm-hmm. where people just came unglued over demolitions. Mm-hmm. And I really thought that I was going to have to, like, hold a chair up and protect myself. But then when you found out that it was just concern and they were, and people showed concern, I think that was great. You weren't the commissioner there. I think you were something involved in the neighborhood. But I think once people understood that they were being heard, I think that's the most important thing. So.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you.
Thanks for letting me just say a few things as well, Mayor and Commissioners. So I know most everything's already been touched on, and some of the questions I was going to touch on have already been asked. So I'm a pretty firm believer that about 95% of all the contractors that are doing this are trying to do the right thing, but I know that there's bad actors out there, and so it's important to come up with these things to try to make sure that the bad actors don't cheat the system and try to get caught. And try to get around the system. So the process that we've all worked together on with Mary Helen at the helm and others, and the staff has done a great job. Mary Helen, for one, anytime that some new idea or process is brought up, she tends to always ask, "Well, why? What's the point?" Yeah, and so rather than just being overly responsive to things where there's not necessarily a need for it, and so I think the process we've gone through, and there's been suggestions or criticisms from, like she said, from builders or from the neighborhood advocates. I've representing the home builders. I've had builders, kind of push back on us for things we were doing as well. So on seeking compromise and working on these issues. So staff did a great job seeking builder input into the process and working with us, and also trying to figure out that, as you pointed out earlier, that some of these things do add costs and time delays, and trying to minimize that as much as you can. As Mike pointed out, the video inspection process, that is something that is available to us to help out. There's also, we've looked for other ways. For example, a small thing was that we used to have all of those reports in before we submitted for our 35-day demo delay. We've got that changed so that you can actually start your delay and submit those things while you're in your delay. So that does help, expedite the process when you're trying to get those things done. Just a couple things I want to point out that are not covered in here that are important points for us in the development community. For those, if you're not aware, anytime we demolish a house in the city or anywhere anymore, we can't take stuff to the landfill or recycling center to dump anything if it's not accompanied with a report and a testing. So that's an important thing. And barring somebody taking the material out to, Tillamook and dumping it in the forest, you can't take your stuff without it being tested and controlled. So that's another important piece to know, just so you guys are aware of that. And one thing that this has also done for a lot of us is, I know the deconstruction ordinance doesn't necessarily kicks in at really older homes, but what we have found in a lot of our cases and working with our demolition people is a lot of these processes are pushing us to more of a deconstructed house anyways, just because by the time you hand remove the siding, you hand remove the asbestos, you hand remove the lead, half the house in a lot of cases is already hand demolished. And so by that time, we're finding it's not that much more effort to just complete the deconstruction process. And then all that's left is just the mechanical removal of the foundation. So that's an important piece. And the other thing I want to add that I hope when we continue on this process, and this isn't in the recommendations now, but from my perspective, Mary Helen and I were joking about the fact that we've gone through all these things to mitigate lead and asbestos, yet she lives in Northeast Portland and I have an office in Northeast Portland, and not picking on anybody involved with Portland Meadows, but we watched the plume of stuff come up from Portland Meadows when it was mechanically demolished a couple weeks ago. It was because they're not subject, and I'm not picking on BDS because that's not the law, but they're not subject to any of the rules that we are currently. So that is something that I hope when we continue this process, we look at that as well. We were building a house last fall where the neighbor next door to us was pressure washing his house, and I just watched the lead chips falling off the side of his house and right onto the ground, and that's not regulated, and I realize that's hard to do on private homeowners, but that's just as dangerous. And so that's something, and that may be an education. I don't know how you get after private stuff, but that's something to be concerned. And then I also, it was mentioned earlier that our current inspection process, the way our system works, the code that we enter to call in for an inspection is the same code that's called an interim erosion control inspection. And that can actually just be for having your straw down, having your fencing around the property for mud and all those things. And so you can get a little bit of a inflated report on how many inspections fail that if you just look at it, that you might think that has to do with demolitions or with the lead because they're grouped together. So I hope that currently there are some limitations on that in the systems, but I hope that we can continue to work on figuring out a way to separate those so that you don't kind of get commingled data. So
let me ask a question. This issue of commercial demolitions has come up now a couple of times during this presentation. I think it sounds like from our questioning, we're happy with the work you're doing on the residential side. We're pleased with the evolution of your thinking, the use of technology, the increased requirements around accountability. Those are all great steps in the right direction. But hearing about this plume over Northeast Portland concerns me. What is the city's role in commercial demolitions?
Our code doesn't require anything special. And we don't look at what the EPA the DEQ rules are.
Why not?
Can I just, Chris Zimmer, who works for OSHA,
yeah,
that protects construction workers, right, in construction, once told me that that was the only hook that the state had unless state legislators worked to change that.
Are
they
we
can
preempted?
Contract the I don't know if I'm going to say this right, and if he's watching, he'll probably slap me. But they can protect the construction worker, and that equates into protecting other people.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But my concern isn't just
the
people doing it. My concern is the people in proximity as well.
I drove by, and I was just kind of like alarmed because I knew other people were upset that Portland Meadows had been torn down.
All right. Well, this is not part of your report today, but it's something I want to follow up on.
Sure. And you know, to most directly answer your question, we aren't the regulatory authority. That was the thing that SB 871 gave to us because we didn't have the regulatory authority until SB 871 said, okay, local jurisdictions, you now have the authority to do this. And OHA, you're going to develop, you know, a list of best practices that local jurisdictions can choose from. So
Have they done that?
Yeah, we've been working with them. Yeah, that's part of this whole process.
On residential stuff.
On the residential stuff. So the next step would be for you to direct us to look into the commercial regulations, and we would, you know, I guess work with the city attorney's office to see what's out there and what
the
options are.
Well, I'd certainly like to know more. I mean, you raised it twice during the presentation, and it's concerning to me, and I'm sure people listening into this are concerned about it.
Yeah, that was
here we are worried about the guy
more than this one
tearing down his garage, and meanwhile there's a plume over northeastern
and
Portland.
And it's property zone commercial, so if you live in a house, let's say across the street from New Seasons, and they tear it down, a building down in that area, and that it would, I mean, so there, yeah, somebody needs to look.
You need a microphone.
Okay, good. Sorry.
I agree, and there's neighborhood concern that it should be looked into. But I hate to say this, it's somebody else's job at this point, except now I've told you out loud in a city calendar.
Yes, that's concerning to me.
More work for you, apparently, right? But on the same token, right, we have schools in our city that are being remodeled, right, and being made earthquake safe. Are we sure that we don't have asbestos and lead paint inside our very old school buildings?
Sure we do.
There probably is asbestos in there, and there are DEQ and EPA requirements for how they are supposed to handle those. It's just that that also means that DEQ is the regulatory authority. So we don't have jurisdiction to go in there with our staff because they're not our regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been my experience in the little bit of stuff that I have seen that typically the larger the project gets when you're in schools and things like that, that the more oversight there is from DEQ and OSHA and various other things, ensuring that your workers are properly protected. For example, typically OSHA doesn't show up on one single family residential house driving through a neighborhood, but if there's a large project with a couple hundred people working on it, they'll typically go by and do job site corrections, make sure things are flowing the way they are. So I think there is a little bit more oversight and involvement on larger projects.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Commissioner Daly.
I just want to chime in with my support for exploring commercial regulations. That seems like a huge gap in our regulation of this issue. And I'm also interested what we could do about the private property issue. No one should be pressure washing, chipping lead paint. It's damaging to the wood, and it's potentially harmful to the person doing it and anyone nearby in the soil that all that paint is falling on. So,
good. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty, second from Commissioner Udaly to accept the report. Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
There's not on the list here.
Aye.
Udaly?
Well, as a former commissioner in charge of BDS, I worked hard to ensure that we're protecting the health of our residents. Lead dust is a serious public health threat, especially to children. It can cause a host of health issues, including permanent brain damage. As a city, we have an obligation to protect all of our children from this threat. I'm encouraged to see the steps we've continued to take to treat this public health threat seriously. As Mary Helen mentioned, this is the strongest demolition protection in the country, and I'm proud of the work we've done, but it's only as strong as our ability to enforce it. It's no accomplishment to have the strictest protections on paper if we fail to enforce them on the ground. It's been more than 2 years since City Council passed the ordinance and more than 18 months since it went into effect. It pains me to think how many residents have suffered from preventable exposure during this time. I am, however, encouraged by the new rules and the direction the Bureau has taken to make sure we're protecting households from demolition-related health risks. The purpose of the residential demolition ordinance, when I sponsored it, was to protect people, particularly children, from asbestos and lead dust and debris from demolition. When BDS comes back with revisions to remove details from the ordinance to place an administrative rule, I'll be looking closely to how we can ensure that these protections will be upheld and that we won't be back here again down the road hearing that we have not met our goals. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, I'd like to thank you all for your testimony. I thought it was fantastic. It was interesting. It was a provocative report. I know you've spent a ton of time and energy on this. I'm very pleased with the progress that you've made. I'm very happy to vote aye. Report's accepted. Thank you.